Hey, are you tired of meeting with prospects only to have them put you off again and again, turning them into yet another missed opportunity? Are you tired of trying to do the same things in meetings and not seeing any improvement in the amount of business you're closing? Do you want to stop giving your time away in hopes that a client will buy something or someday transfer their assets? Well, Whiteboard University is our two-hour live workshop where we will teach you how to have engaging meetings with every prospect and client you meet with, how to quantify your advice so prospects are willing and excited to pay you a financial planning fee, and finally, where we teach you how to explain financial strategies in a dynamic, interesting way that will separate you from all the boring advisors who do the same old thing. If you're serious about having better client meetings and closing business faster, visit WhiteboardU.com today and sign up for one of our live workshops in November. Whiteboard University offers a 100% money-back guarantee if we don't help you improve your communication and meeting skills. That's WhiteboardU.com. We'll see you there. Well, hello, friends. Andy Tropp here, joined with another great advisor from our Elite Advisor Network coaching community. Veronica, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
So tell me first, and this doesn't throw me off, but it throws a lot of people off. Where do you live?
In Fargo, North Dakota.
North Dakota.
Yeah.
Love it. So I lived in South Dakota for many years, and so it became, the Dakotas became normal to me. But I joke that I often don't have to ask people to save my phone number in their phone or put my name on it, because if they see a South Dakota number, it's either a spammer or Andy. Because there's just not that many people know in the Dakotas. But today's show, we're going to talk about why actually living there in the environment that you're in, which is isolated to some degree. And how many people are in Fargo now?
Gosh, a few hundred thousand. Well, I'm a border state, so it's Moorhead, Minnesota, and Fargo, North Dakota. So combined, yeah, it's not quite 300,000.
Right. But in Fargo proper, it's less than 200, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's the same way as in Sioux Falls, which is the biggest city in South Dakota. And then after that, the second biggest city in that state would be what?
Bismarck.
With how many?
Oh, gosh, I don't even know. Didn't know you were going to quiz me today.
But it was going to be, my point being, like in South Dakota, it's like 180 and the next one's like 50,000.
Oh, it's right. Fairly sizable. So,
yeah. But the other thing is it's just not a lot of people. So you would think, gosh, what are you doing out there? Well, what kind of business are you able to get out there? And so today we're going to talk about specific group of people that you have grown in knowledge of and service to. And those are people that work for the federal government. So first, if you could just share how long you've been in business and how do you describe what you do to people when they say, what do you do?
Well, I got my insurance license back in 2006, my advisory license in 2014. So I've been around for a little while, I guess you could say. And when people ask me what I do, I'm a financial advisor that primarily focuses on federal employees and their benefits and helping them navigate that into retirement.
Got it. So with that lead in, why, or let's say, how did you first get connected? Because I want to open up the eyes to an audience of clientele, a group of clients that a lot of advisors might have, not only do they think there aren't that many, or there's not that much opportunity. I want to think through like why this could be a great group of people for an advisor to work with. So how did you first get introduced to that audience?
Well, actually, so when I first started in the business, it was insurance only. And my partner and I were talking about the fact that we primarily did Medicare and long-term care, and that was it. And so our thought process is we needed to get into a younger market. We need to have more of a wide age span than what we were previously working. So my old partner's brother actually works with federal employees out in Texas. And okay. So we connected with them, and that's how we were actually introduced to work in the federal market, because that's what they do out there. So that was actually my very first introduction of even the possibility of it.
Let's start on the negative side. Why would people, what's the thought process that people think, I don't want to work, whether it's true or not, what are thought process people have of like, I don't want to target that group? Why did people think that or continue to think of why they wouldn't want to work with federal employees?
Well, the difficult part is actually understanding their benefits to start. There is a base to it, and then it just kind of a little bit of variables coming off. So I suppose that would be the first one. The second is if you get a younger federal employee, there's not always a lot that you can do for them at that age. So until they get closer to retirement, there's really not a lot you can always do for them other than just say, hey, this is where you're at. This is what it looks like in the future. Right. Call me down the road.
Right. So what are the benefits of targeting and working with federal employees?
The biggest benefit I have is once you're in, you're in. And if you do a good job and you have a good name, your name circles like wildfire. Like I have a lot of clients like the local VA here, and it doesn't matter who they are, when someone's saying they're retiring, like, oh, did you talk to Veronica yet? Or did you talk to Veronica yet?
Wow.
I have no idea who I am. I'm not on site. I'm not HR there. I make sure that's clear, but everybody knows my name. And so once you're in, and if you do a good job, I mean, your name spreads just because of the lack of help that these federal employees have with their benefits in retirement.
Well, let me go there. I don't want to be negative Nancy or anything, but you talked about the lack of help they have with their, and I don't know if that's unique to them. I don't know that corporations do a phenomenal job either with their benefits, but I was under the assumption that, oh, you're a federal employee, there's someone who will help you with your benefits. Because they're sort of in such a closed ecosystem, it seems like maybe it would be simplified, maybe it would be simpler to understand, it would be uniformed, it wouldn't change very much, there's not very many variables. So why would you need an outside expert? What is the reality of retirement and benefits? And let's talk about those people in the ideal spot for federal employees.
Well, so I've been working with them for 14 years, 15 years now. So I've been with them quite some time.
That's enough time to have an informed opinion, not just
yes.
Opinion, right.
So I've been through a little bit, and I think COVID actually made a lot of changes, but every agency switched from having a local HR person to a centralized location. So what that means is there's nobody in person that they can walk to and ask questions. Now, previously, even before that change, you know, the HR specialist was never allowed to give advice. So they could certainly explain, yes, check this box or answer this question and what this is as far as an education purpose.
But if I said, what should I do? They would not say, here's what you should do. Okay.
Right. So they never even had that. Granted, there were some agencies that had some really good people on staff, and then they obviously retired before even this transition to centralizing it. But so sometimes they would give maybe a little more advice than what they were supposed to. But now that's all gone. And the agencies, and when they receive the information from the federal employee, they're not there to be your advocate. They're there to receive your documentation, submit your documentation, and move on. You know, it's the numbers they're behind. So they just take your data, put it in, data in, data out. So you have to be in control of how good the data is you submit. And you have to make sure you're doing everything correctly, but you have nowhere really to go. I mean, you can email and ask questions. I don't want to say that that's not there, but it's not one-on-one. It's not personal service. It's how do I do this? How do I do that? But they can't educate you beyond submit it here, or send it here.
All right. So the very structure of it is that it's advice. There's an advice void, right?
Yes.
Right. So these are people that have benefits, have retirement plans in place. Many of them pretty good. Yes.
Well, the one thing that I will say too that I wanted to get to, and I kind of stopped for a second, but the other problem they had is even when they had in-person HR that could help with people, the common thing that I hear from most federal employees is when they started as a federal employee, they just signed up for whatever and they moved on and never looked back. So when people come to me, they don't even know what they have. They don't even know that they have a pension. They don't know. They're like, what is Fegley? I mean, some do, some don't. But when they signed up, literally they said, I just took the max and never looked back. And to me, that's obviously not helpful because you have no idea what you signed up for.
Right.
Like I have a perfect example. I have a lady who she had no spouse. She had no children. I'm not saying there's no reason to not have life insurance. If that there's charitable intent, there's obviously other reasons. But generally, if you have life insurance, you have a purpose, right? And she signed up for the max and she came to one of my seminars and she was paying almost $500 a month in life insurance premium. The first question I asked her is, I was like, well, who's your beneficiary? I don't know. She had a TSB. She had almost $1 million. And I asked again then, well, who's your beneficiary? This isn't my first appointment, just getting to know her, understanding her situation, needs, you know, things like that. And so she had over a million in TSB. She had the max of life insurance she could, and she was paying for this. She had no idea who the beneficiary was, and she was almost ready to retire. So when she started with the USDA, she said, and that's where I give that example besides, I signed up for the max, and until today, I've never looked back because the deduction comes out of their paycheck. So if no one shows them or tells them or explains it to them, I mean, she had no idea.
That was just another line on her paycheck, and she just assumed it was some fee or whatever. And
as the price went up, her salary also went up. So she didn't really notice because the basic life insurance does go up every 5 years. So she didn't even realize that with the salary, you know, and her income needs are met. So she didn't even question it. But yeah, almost okay. $500 a month okay. that she had no idea.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's a whole lot. There's a lot going on there. So let's talk more about, and actually, let me dive into this. Who are we talking about, right? We're talking about, and I love that you pointed this out. If you're in a major city at all, Bismarck, Sioux Falls, right? These are cities that people have never really thought of and probably couldn't find on a map, right? But if you're in a major city, whatever that is, there is likely a government office of one, if not all of these
right.
in your state, right? So postal.
Yep.
Right? VA.
Correct.
USDA. Air traffic,
yep.
Border patrol,
correct.
Law enforcement, yep. Courts, and FBI.
Yes. And there's a few others too, but yeah, that's quite an alignment that you could potentially have in your area.
Right. So tell me about how you are approaching these people in light of a change you've made in your business towards, hey, I want to try to do planning for people, not just a transactional one-off business. How are you approaching these people given what you know about their situation? And then don't let me forget, I do want to ask about sort of becoming sort of endorsed or groups that you can sort of get into to gain access to these folks. I want people to know by the end of the episode, like, where should they go next if they're interested in growing this area? But how are you approaching these people in relation to planning? Again, assuming that, you know, they don't have a massive amount of complexity, right? But how are you approaching them with planning?
What I've done, and this has kind of been a learning process ever since I joined EAN, I never did planning before. Right. I just did either managed assets or not. But so I've kind of determined, depending on their age and how far they off to retirement, there's a simplified plan that we can usually do if you're far off, if this is what you're looking for. And then as retirement approaches, it would be more like a normal financial plan, you know, that you could have anybody who wants to manage their assets, income distribution, you know, taxes, all that kind of stuff. So we're kind of simplifying the process, but yet we're still tweaking it because, again, this is kind of new to me and this right. part of it.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people have that sort of like, here's our basic plan. You know, there are very few variables, or we understand all the variables. And then as the complexity grows, the planning fee can change. But are you approaching these people with planning at this point? Maybe not all of them, but some of them.
I'm still working through the process, but what I'm doing right now is in the first appointment, I'm kind of treating like as if I'm their physician. I'm going to listen to them, see what their needs are, figure out their goals, and then determine how I can help them best. And then at that point, I'd probably recommend either if it's just a financial plan that they need and then tell them to call me back down the road, or if there's something different. Yeah. But I'm just kind of doing an assessment appointment just like I always have. And then, but the planning, when I do it, especially if they're years off, it's a fraction of what it costs in a regular non-federal employee client, because we've systematized a lot of stuff here. So it's pretty okay. simple what we're doing.
I want to go back to, before we talk about how to get in with this audience, something I thought was really interesting, which, you know, it's just, there's so much you just don't know until you get into a group of people. But tell me about, let me talk about something really positive first about this group of people is they often stay in their jobs much longer, right? And they have this other benefit of a minimum retirement age of 20 years of service. And
just to correct you, there's three regular retirement options. It's age 62 and 5, 60 and 20, or minimum retirement age and 30.
All right, 30. Sorry, I mistyped that. But then I want to talk about the 5 thing.
Right? Oh, the 5, yep.
Yeah, that's which I thought was really interesting. So tell me how this, tell me the phrase again.
Plus 5? 62 and 5?
Yeah, the 62 and 5. So explain what 62 and 5 is and why that creates a really interesting group of potential clients? I have no idea this existed. This is so fascinating.
The 60-5, because healthcare is usually one of the biggest struggles that a lot of people have when they want to retire prior to 65. So having the VA in town, I've actually had a lot of physicians that will go finish out 5 years at the VA to walk away into retirement with health insurance. And so if they're age 57, you know, they could work from 57 to 62, as long as they've had health insurance that full 5 years, they can actually retire from the federal government. The pension won't be a lot. I mean, it will be based on salary too, so maybe not so bad, but they can actually then retire with 5 years at age 62 with health insurance. So if they want to leave the private sector, finish off 5 years at the VA, retire at 62, then now they've got health care.
For how long?
For as long as they live into retirement.
Right. So the idea that someone at age 57 would say, okay, I'm going to sell my practice. I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to go serve in the VA for 5 years and then lock in health insurance for the rest of their life is really interesting. And you know people who have done this, and this is a regular thing. Is it still happening?
Yeah, it still happens all the time. Like, because the private sector, I feel like sometimes pays more than the federal government, depending on. I have surgeons that have pretty good salaries. I have some physicians that pay pretty good, but... yeah. So just to finish it up for that health insurance, so they don't have to worry about that bucket. So it is actually pretty common. And that's actually how I learned it, was by people coming in and telling me that was their intent. The problem, though, is, again, to that first phrase that nobody's there to help, they often get a lot of this stuff confused and they don't always realize the eligibility part. But that's where I come in and make sure they understand it.
Right. It's just fascinating that you would, that small pocket of people. And yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. And that exists, and I'm not going to call it a loophole, but it just that pocket of people exists. It's just very interesting, right? So you have people that are consistent in their work very often. They've worked there quite a long time. They are going to have benefits. They do have pensions. They have had some life insurance in place. A lot of them don't fully understand what they have. There's no one on site to help them. Which creates a gap of knowledge and support. You've got people in virtually every city that qualify under this. How do you get in the doors?
Well, so like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, so I know a lot of things have changed, but there's companies out there and there's just different ways you want to do it. Like ProFed is one that you can go to.
ProFed?
ProFed, yep. This one you would pay, it's kind of probably one of the better ones in the sense that if you pay a fee, they will help educate you and help make sure you do it right. But it's also one of those, like, to get into that one, you need to be interviewed and they need to make sure that you're going to do good to the clients and you're not just going in there to get a bunch of people and leads and whatnot.
That's kind of nice.
But they're very more hand helping. And when I first started, I had a lot of that and there's not as much of that specific one. There's another one called Snow Federal Seminar. You can be a chartered federal benefits consultant. There's a designation you take with them. They're not so much ones to help you get in. They do have the ability to do seminars on sites, but you don't always get it because what happens is a lot of these federal employee marketing, they have territories. So if someone already has a territory, they can put you on the list. And so if they ever back out of it, then it's up for grabs because they're not going to duplicate, you know, to five advisors one list.
And what's the name of that company? Snow
Federal Seminars.
Snow Federal Seminars. Okay. So essentially you're buying a territory and then they're educating you and saying, hey, here's the materials, go get it.
Yep. You basically, with that one, you just get educated. You just have their designation. You renew it every year. And that's basically what they do for you. And then there's other FMOs out there that say, if you work with them, you know, they will provide the contacts, the federal employee information, so that in return of doing business with them, that's what they provide you.
Okay. I don't know if this is an answerable question, and you could say wide variety, but what kind of folks are these? I mean, what kind of folks are you working with? I mean, are they easy to work with? Are they, you know, are they agreeable? You know, I've heard of certain groups of people, and I don't want to offend anyone who might be in that group, but like, everybody thinks they want to work with this group, but then you do and you realize they suck. I do not like working with that group of people, and you can all fill in your own gap or whatever that is, right? But are these people agreeable? Are they DIYers? Are they completely lost and they're just so grateful to see you? Like, what's been your, and of course we've got to factor in the North Dakota niceness, right? So it may not be true everywhere, right? But what's been your experience with working with federal employees?
I feel like you still get a little bit of everybody. There are some do-it-yourselfers. There are some exactly like the minute you get in there, they just want you to work with them. But my biggest thing that I would differentiate them to non-federal is they're very diligent. When you ask them to do something, they do it. They do their homework. There's not no-shows. You know, they show up to your appointment when you schedule it.
I'm just laughing because I feel like they do what they're told.
They do, but... But the biggest challenge I would say is you have to earn their trust. They're not just going to work with anybody, because I do feel like right now it could be considered a saturated market. Because when I started in 2010, I think I first did my Fargo seminar, because I did my first seminar in Bismarck. But in Fargo, I was doing two seminars a quarter, and I had over 50 people coming to each seminar just because the need was so much. Yeah. Well, now, so the problem is there's a lot of people coming from other territories coming to my area. So the advantage I have is I'm local. I've been here, so I'm not even worried about it, because you have competition no matter what. What do you do to stand apart, right? Mm-hmm. But I say I love federal employees just for the fact that they do their homework. You know, they are diligent. The biggest thing I think would be a hurdle is just the trust factor. You just need to make sure that they know that you have their best intention. You're not here to scam them or do anything that you shouldn't, which is what you should be doing anyway. Yeah. But unfortunately, there's always some bad seeds that give bad names. Therefore, you have to kind of work around that a little bit, sometimes a little bit more.
Yeah. One other question I have about what other opportunities come from those employees? I mean, are you able to send, you know, like a lot of people, you go, oh, you've got a brother. Maybe your brother doesn't work for the government, but do you find that once they trust you, they are good referral sources
to other
family members and things like that?
I have not. And I think I told you, I have not done any marketing since spring of last year. Just because I've been all referrals. And so that's why I say in the beginning, if you get into a niche like this and you have a good name and you do a good job, I don't ask for referrals. I just get them. And so for the last over a year and a half, almost 2 years, well, I guess not quite, but I have been just literally trying to get my office equipped to handle.
Yeah, we've been working with you on systems. Yes. Because sometimes the biggest problem is you have too many people show up and then you can't serve them. And that's not... More customers, more clients is not the answer if your systems can't handle it. That's a great way actually to go out of business and ruin your reputation, right?
Right.
Right. So, yeah. So I know that about you, and our work with you has been more on how do you increase your capacity, train up people, charge a planning fee so you're not just giving away your time, right?
Right.
And I know, you know, that's still in development and that's good. I've got all my questions answered. Is there anything else you feel like people should know about this group of people, about the opportunity that's there? Any other cautions if they are thinking about pursuing this?
I mean, I absolutely think it's worth it because obviously I'm in it. But I will tell you, it's kind of like a conveyor belt, though. It's not going to have instant gratification. It takes time because, again, you have to build trust. You have to understand the benefits. You have to become that expert. And then you have to know how to work with them. So I would say that in the beginning, it might not be as lucrative as you would like. However, if you stick with it and continue on the path, it is absolutely worth it. Like I said, just to be in the position that I'm in without having to focus on marketing at this point, not that I don't want to, but... it takes time, but once you're in, and you just really got to make some decisions that is in the best interest of the business and the clients. And what I mean by that is sometimes you might get a bad seed, and just like the referrals spread like wildfire, that could happen too. So sometimes I've helped clients that I might not have wanted to, just for the sake of not having a bad seed out there. So other than it taking a while and that potential, which honestly, that could happen anywhere too. It just takes some time, but it is definitely worth it once you get into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think they also, you know, you always have to be willing to fire a client or say, hey, this, you know, I'm not a good fit for you, which is a nice way of saying, I like nice people. So, that's wonderful. Well, Veronica, thank you for taking the time to explain. I think this corner of the market that a lot of people just think, oh, I never thought about that. And, you know, I hope that people will take the practical steps to look into this. I appreciate you being a part of our coaching program, and the hard work you've done as we've tried to, help your business become, more efficient. And I just want to thank you for being a great part of our program, from a coaching perspective, but also, today for giving us your time and your expertise. I know I appreciate it. Our community appreciates you, but also the larger EAN community appreciates you. So, thanks for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it too. All the help you guys have done. I couldn't be charging bees right now without you. So I appreciate all of you guys in return tenfold.
Awesome. Thank you, friend.
All right. Thank you.